Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Some of the most significant things the United States government has done to deal with climate change happened because of a Supreme Court decision. The case was Massachusetts versus EPA, and it was decided in a 5-4 ruling in 2007. It laid the groundwork for many of President Obama's climate policies. And there's a new book out this week looking at that case. It's called The Rule of Five, Making Climate History at the Supreme Court. Its author, Richard Lazarus, teaches at Harvard Law School and has represented the government and environmental groups in 40 Supreme Court cases. Richard Lazarus, welcome.
I'm delighted to be here, Jeremy.
Well, let's talk about this case, first of all. It goes back to 1999 and a man named Joe Mendelson, who delivered a petition to the Environmental Protection Agency. Who was he and what issue did he have with the EPA?
Yeah. So Joe Mendelson is what I would call one of the second generation environmental lawyers. He goes to law school. He works for an environmental public interest group no one has ever heard of. They're paycheck by paycheck at best. And he's concerned about climate change. In the beginning, he's actually optimistic. The new president of the United States is Bill Clinton. The vice president of the United States is Al Gore, who in June of 1992 wrote the book called Earth and the Balance on Climate Change, saying this was the single most important threat facing humankind. But Joe grew increasingly frustrated during the Clinton administration, because they did a lot of really good stuff on environmental law. They did nothing on climate change.
And he wanted them to regulate carbon dioxide as an air pollutant under the Clean Air Act.
That's exactly right. He thought it was obvious. He thought the science was clear. All the other environmental groups, all the mainstream, we call the big groups, they all said, Joe, quiet down. Don't rock the boat. Don't give them a hard time. We'll do better next time. And Joe finally got fed up. He walked down to EPA and handed them a petition which said, I think you've got an obligation of the Clean Air Act to regulate greenhouse gases. And it was such a controversial move when he pushed that on EPA that even some of the other environmental groups managed to lobby to cut off his funding.
That's so interesting, because it reminds me of when same-sex marriage was brought to the Supreme Court. There were a lot of people who wanted same-sex marriage to be legal in this country who said, no, don't do it now. This could be the wrong time. You might lose, and that would be even worse.
Exactly right. It's about strategy and timing. And when the stakes are big, that's exactly when these disagreements – they're good faith disagreements. They're not bad faith. But the battles are no less intense.
Well, one of the interesting things about this book is that you learn a lot about the inner workings of the court. And of course, you have represented the government and environmental groups in 40 cases before the Supreme Court. You've presented oral arguments in 14 of them. How does the court decide which case it's going to take?
Yeah. So what the court does is the court basically gets these documents called petitions for writ of certiorari. They get about 10,000 of those a year. They grant 70 of them. Mm-hmm. When the justices look at that petition and their law clerks, they're looking for several things. They're looking for what is an important legal issue, and they're looking for something where they think the time is right. In the past, the court has often just never seen it to be important or the time is ripe when the environmentalists have lost in the lower court. They've been pretty ready to grant cases when the government has lost or industry has lost. Hmm. And that's what made this so unusual.
Well, and how much do they know about science, these justices?
Oh, they know nothing about science at all. And that's why the people who want to get the court to take the case here were very clever in how they presented it. They didn't present it really as a climate change case, because if they did, they didn't think the justice would be that interested in it. So they presented the case as a sort of a technical question of administrative law. So it was done very cleverly by the environmental lawyers here, is they pitched the case to the court and trying to get the court to take the case. They pitched it as an administrative law case and not as an environmental case.
About whether the EPA got to decide whether to regulate greenhouse gas emissions as part of the Clean Air Act?
Yeah, basically whether EPA had the discretion not to decide the issue yet. They even buried in their petition the issue they cared the most about. And that's whether greenhouse gases are in fact air pollutants or not, because they didn't think that would attract the justices. And then in sort of what is known as classic bait and switch strategy before the Supreme Court, once the court granted review, they then buried the issue they said was so important, and they put front and center the big question they cared about, and that's whether greenhouse gases are air pollutants or not. That's what Supreme Court lawyers do, who know how to sort of manipulate the process a bit.
What was it like when you first argued an oral argument before the Supreme Court? That must have been pretty scary.
Yeah, it was actually pretty scary. I remember I argued my first case before the Supreme Court in October 1986. I was a pretty young person back then. I remember when I got asked the first question before the court is by Justice Harry Blackmun. And my first reaction was sort of to exclaim to myself, wow, that's Justice Blackmun. He's asked me a question and then proceed to answer it. But it's quite fun because when you actually argue before the court and the arguments are an hour, half hour each side, it's like a conversation. You're in this extraordinary majestic room. But you're engaging in a conversation with the justices, and they're good lawyers, and they ask real questions, and you get to talk to them about the case.
And in this case, Massachusetts versus EPA, the justice that was on everybody's mind was Justice Anthony Kennedy, who for so many cases was the swing vote.
That's right. And this case was no different. Justice Kennedy, when he was on the court, was the decisive vote in basically every single environmental case in over three decades except one. And everyone knew this case would be no exception. And Justice Kennedy was not a liberal justice. Justice Kennedy was not an environmentalist. Justice Kennedy was someone you had to figure out. And the justice who really succeeded to that here and led to the result played no less a role than anybody else was Justice John Paul Stevens. He was the senior justice of the majority, and he had to make two really important decisions here once the vote was made. One was who'd write the opinion. And the other was, since he decided he would write it, how to write it to keep Justice Kennedy.
So even after you kind of know that Justice Kennedy is going to be on your side, you've still got to write the opinion in a way that he doesn't decide to leave.
Oh, absolutely. What happens is the justices meet 2 days after the argument in a private conference. No one is allowed in the room. And they vote. And they go around the room. The senior justice goes first down to the junior justice, and they vote. In this case, they went around the room on December 1st, 2006, 2 days after the argument, and Justice Kennedy provided the fifth vote. That meant it was a tentative vote of 5-4. But votes change all the time. Mm-hmm. And Justice Kennedy was known for changing his votes in cases, including environmental cases. So when you have the initial vote, and the public doesn't know about this initial vote, it's all private. So Justice Stevens could have done one strategic move, which he told me. I talked about this case. He could have assigned the opinion to Justice Kennedy. That would have maximized the odds that Justice Kennedy would have stayed in the majority. But Justice Stevens decided to take a chance and assign the opinion to himself because he was worried if Justice Kennedy wrote the opinion, it made it more likely he'd stay. Not a sure thing, but more likely. But it would be a very narrow opinion, which wouldn't establish much law. And what Justice Stevens told me was this was a really important case to him. He could not understand why so many people, including so many Republicans, and he was a Republican, didn't understand the seriousness of climate change. He wanted to make a statement.
So what was the significance of this case in the end? People say that it laid the groundwork for President Obama's Clean Power Plan, which was hailed by environmental activists as a major step toward curbing greenhouse gas emissions. But the Trump administration quickly unraveled that.
Yeah. No, it's called the most significant environmental law decision ever by the Supreme Court for a reason. And that's because it did lay the groundwork for absolutely every single thing the Obama administration did, all the motor vehicle rules, the Clean Power Plan, the methane rules, sort of across the board. It led to Paris. You would not have had the agreement in Paris in December 2015 for the first time 189 nations coming together. You're right. Now, the challenge is, to what extent can basically all that was accomplished by Massachusetts, the promise that was realized during Obama, to what extent can it be protected? For the past 3 years plus, there's certainly been a lot of efforts by the Trump administration to unravel those. Those are all being challenged. Those have not yet succeeded. The Paris withdrawal has not yet happened. Under the procedure of the Paris Accord, it doesn't happen right away. And that's actually what makes this election coming up so important for climate issues, because if the Trump administration is confined to 4 years, basically every single thing that happened during the Obama administration can be protected. If there's another 4 years, it'd be much harder to protect all those regulations, all those rules, and harder to protect the Paris Agreement.
Well, and also President Trump could easily get another justice or two on the court.
That's absolutely right.
Richard Lazarus, a lot of people are concerned about growing partisanship on the court. Do you, as someone who has spent so long and has such a deep relationship with the Supreme Court, not to mention your close friendship with the Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts. Do you still have faith in the Supreme Court as an independent arbiter?
I still do right now, but it's clearly under siege. I mean, I think the court has been working very hard. Certainly the Chief Justice has been working very hard to create not just the impression but the reality that they're not just a partisan branch. But that's harder to maintain over time. If the other branches pick the Senate, wants to turn them more partisan, they can do that. If candidates for president like Donald Trump did in 2016 campaign for office by listing the people he will put on the Supreme Court, vote for me because these are the people I will nominate, and then the Senate confirmation hearings become the kind of debacle we've seen recently, it's very hard for the court to maintain that nonpartisanship if the other two branches basically are trying to bring them in their debate. So at the moment, I think this is they're at risk.
That is Richard Lazarus, whose new book is called The Rule of Five, Making Climate History at the Supreme Court. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeremy.